All right, the Senate, please come back to order. We have reports from standing committees.
January the 27th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number two appropriation, to whom was referred Senate File 56, Study on Transfer of Public Land, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Perkins, and Ross. No, Senator Hastert, excuse, Senator Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 27th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number two appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 91, Charter School Eligibility Bonus Payments. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, and Ross. Excuse, Senator Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 27th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number two appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 92, Workers' Compensation County Elected Officials. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkin, and Ross. Excuse, Senator Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman. January the 27th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number seven, Corporation Electoral Political Subdivision, to whom was referred Senate File 36, Personal Identifying Information Definitions. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. January the 27th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number seven, Corporation Election and Political Subdivision, to whom was referred Senate File 35, Security Breach Notification. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, Pappas, Scott, absent Senator Meyer, Senator Case, Chairman. January 27, 2015, Mr. President, Committee Number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivision, to whom was referred Senate File 50, Tribal Liaisons. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Meyer, and Pappas, excused. Senator Hicks and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. January the 27th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number seven, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, to whom was referred Senate Joint Resolution 1, Right of Privacy Constitutional Amendment. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hicks, and Pappas. No, Senator Scott, absent Senator Meyer, Senator Case, Chairman.
Ready to go to committee of the whole, or we have some bills to read on?
Senator Case.
Senate File 50, Tribal Liaisons, was just read in. It does have an appropriation. I'd ask that it be re-referred to the Appropriations Committee.
Without objection, Senate File 50 is re-referred to Appropriations. Any other announcements?
Do we have anything else to read in?
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business. Bills on general file.
I move that the Senate resolve itself back into the Committee of the Whole to discuss bills on general file.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion's been adopted. Senator Kraft.
Are you ready?
Committee of the Whole will come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 78. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 78, Education Dual Language Immersion Programs, sponsored by Senator Wasserberger. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senator Anderson, 02, Cole, Pappas, Rothfuss. No, Senator Dockstader, Senator Cole, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hassler, Ross, and Wasserberger, excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Move that one committee of the whole rise and report do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 78. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that that be read in at this time.
Senate File 78, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 10.
Madam Chairman, I would move that amendment, and for an explanation of the bill and the Standing Committee amendment, defer to Senator Wasserberger.
Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would move first. I would move to Senate File 78, Standing Committee Number 1, to Senate File 78, and that was a two-martini lunch, apparently. Anyway, I will explain the amendment. The amendment was added to the bill, and essentially what it does is require the Professional Teaching Standards Board to promulgate rules and regulations for the certification of teachers visiting the United States for the purposes of the dual language immersion program. And they're already doing that now. It was agreed to by the director of the PTSB, and so it's language that they're actually already doing, Madam Chairman. So I would move the amendment.
Discussion on the amendment? Ready for a question on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 78, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is carried. We're back on the bill. Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a very quick run through Senate File 78. On page 2, lines 1 through 11, this requires a 50-50 requirement between teaching English and also a foreign language. And then on page 2, lines 13 to page 3, line 5, it creates the rules and regulations to be written by the department, and those are to be done by April 15th. On page 3, lines 7 through 23, it appropriates $20,000 per school to start this dual language immersion program, and then also grants visas refunded at 100% for the teachers for this program. And then on page 4, it creates the notification to the school districts by May 1st. And then what happens to the funding on page 4, lines 11 through 23, and if there is not enough funding for it, it would be a pro rata to all the different school districts. On page 5, lines 10 through 15, requires the districts to report back to the Department of Education on the dual language immersion. And then finally, on 5, over to page 6, we inserted the requirement that PTSB write the rules and regs for the certification. And then finally, on page 6, lines 9 through 17, it appropriates $400,000 for this program. And if you remember, in the budget session last year, what we did was we rolled in the money that was appropriated already from this program into this bill. And then finally, probably the most important part is that on page 7, lines 5 through 17, it creates two new positions at the Wyoming Department of Education to be the director of this program. And then it appropriates $185,000 for the next budget year, and that would be reoccurring funds upon completion of this program. And then I will briefly tell you what this program does. Essentially what it does is you start teaching Spanish or a foreign language at kindergarten and first grade, and you have to have a school of approximately 50 students, or you need a what we call an education, a two-section school. At lunchtime, the students who are learning Spanish from their Spanish teacher trade with the English teacher who was teaching language arts and reading, and they flip. Okay, so they get half of their instruction in English, half of their instruction in Spanish. Or it could be any other foreign language. It could be Mandarin Chinese, German, Japanese, whatever. But what happens with this program is you have to bring in a teacher through a visa system to teach that foreign language. Or they may be a certified Spanish teacher from a local college that you're doing that with. So they have a Spanish degree plus an elementary education degree. The teachers from a foreign country would have to be certified in their nation in elementary education. So the visa is the issue of getting those teachers here. Once you hire your kindergarten and first grade teachers in a foreign language, then you grow it through your grades. So it goes into third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. So they've gone K through six with this foreign language instruction. Then at grade 7, they take Spanish 3 at the high school. Grade 8, they take Spanish 4 or any foreign language that you have. And then once that is completed, then you have a junior college teach the foreign language program at the college level, and they get 24 hours of credit when they graduate from high school. So that is the basic system. I have studied this in depth. I went to China and looked at dual language immersion programs there 2 years ago. I visited about 25 schools. I can tell you that it's the most amazing education reform that I've ever seen. Literally, by the time they're in their second year of instruction, those kids are speaking and are fluent in that foreign language. And as you know, we get older, we struggle to learn a foreign language. But at that age, they can suck it up. They're just like sponges. And so it's amazing what they can do. Last fall, I went to Utah. I went to 5 schools that was doing this program in Salt Lake City. The same results. Last December, I went to 2 schools in Casper. The same results. So I would strongly urge your support for this bill. I think it's a great bill, and I stand for questions.
Questions on the bill? Discussion? Mr. President.
Privilege. On the powder. Madam Chairman, with respect to the staffing that the Department of Education, did appropriations or the Education Committee look at the number of vacancies that we have in the Department of Ed and whether or not we could fill those vacancies with these positions but implement this program with the existing FTE numbers?
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In fact, that was the very question. I kind of struggled when we were dealing with this appropriation. I think the program is good and ultimately ended up voting for it, but I did struggle with the whole idea of 2 new FTEs. They have currently 34 vacancies in the Department of Ed. And according to this footnote, they propose, of course, the hiring of 2 new FTEs, but if there's if the program really doesn't need the 2 FTEs, then these positions will be used in the education accountability activities. I'm just have a real problem with that, particularly when they got 34 vacancies.
Mr. Minority, floor leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I asked the same question in committee of the Superintendent of Public Instruction, and she said that she was certainly willing to use some of her FTEs, and that if there was further need in the future to reclaim those FTEs once they've hired out and planned their resources, that would be something they could come back to appropriations with. But she seemed receptive to that. I won't say that she fully committed to it at that point. I would characterize it as open to that discussion at the time, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. One thing's for sure, every new program is the best new program since the last one we talked about. And this has an idea and has a lot of merit, but just some questions about it. You know, the first thing is, and all of you are very much aware of what we call, I call them the legislative foundation program. And it's things that we decide to do and we want to do outside the model, although we do outside the funding for school foundation program. But of course, the money for this comes from that. You know, we're making a major step. The first question is, so how far did this go and how much would it ultimately cost? Has anyone looked at the long-term plans of what it might do, what it might do, might not do? The second thing I would ask is, you know, if this is such a good idea, why can't the schools do it anyway without having someone in the Department of Ed be involved in it, just do it with local control and local school districts? And the last thing, Madam Chairman, that I would ask is, getting back to the FTEs, I really think that should have been the first step that you would have done, is to look at existing situations and taking advantage of some of those vacancies rather than coming with new money and a new appropriation and more positions.
Further discussion? Senator Kinski.
Chairman, a question for the floor manager of the bill. I'm not familiar with what a two-section school is. You'll note that in my area I have some very small schools, and I wonder if they'd be able to take advantage of this if they're so inclined. And second, the senator spoke about English language learners learning Spanish. Could these funds also be used for Spanish language speakers learning English? In other words, could these funds be used to supplement ESL, English as a second language, programs?
Further discussion? Senator Dockstetter.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I'd explain my no vote on the committee. After I heard this presentation, I'd heard something similar earlier out on the road this summer with where it had been started elsewhere in Utah. And thought, this is impressive, and I commend the person bringing the bill. It's impressive. It opens up a lot of opportunities in our schools. But ultimately, I had to come down to a no, because it's just we have that small school exclusion problem that hasn't been answered out there. And we haven't got it totally resolved with where it fits in with the Hathaway. And how long will we continually feed this program? That was just brought up again by our good majority floor leader, that where does this go? I look back, as I reflected on it, thought more about the bill, I thought maybe we're too fortunate over on the west side. We've got a little valley where I start thinking about people in my neighborhood. And maybe because of the culture or what have you, there are several dialects of Spanish that are fluently spoken. This little town of 100, less than 100, in a valley of 13,000. Little town of 100, got several dialects. I just started going around my neighborhood thinking about several dialects of Spanish, Russian, Lithuanian, and Japanese, maybe within a stone's throw of my house. And we didn't have any programs that we funded to put it together through the government. It's just part of what people, the decisions they made on their with themselves, how they're going to take their lives and how they can speak a second language fluently. We got $400,000 here, $20,000 there. Where does it end? I would suspect that the superintendent in front of that particular committee would be agreeing to begin with, until that person gets their feet on the ground and can see what's involved. We've got to be careful here. We're going to grow some government here. We're going to throw some more mandates at our school folks that we've done before. I'd urge caution, and that's where I stand, as a no on the bill. Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chairman. I voted for this bill in committee to get it out on the floor and to hear the comments in the debate like the ones we just heard. This bill gives me pause, and it gives me pause having been a teacher for years and know how school works, and I won't take that away from the sponsor. He's got plenty of experience himself, and I'm sure that he speaks from that experience. But what gives me pause about this is looking at things from a global sense. You just saw the bill in regard to educational accountability. And that's a big bill, and it's a big responsibility. And when I look at that in terms of implementation and management and the reality of really getting that into motion for not only big schools, small schools, and I looked at all that's gone on, and this appears then to me, if I were a teacher, if I were an administrator, another straw on the camel's back. Now, I know we've been given instruction in regard to how to manage staff and trade and how to work this in. To me, that's another form of micromanagement on the part of the legislature. I think, in honesty, terrific program, well documented, but I think it's something that's ahead of its time. I think we need to implement what we've got in place, get people comfortable with that, allow our superintendent to get her feet under her, to get her department in order so that she can provide the guidance and things necessary. We talked about 3- and 4-year math. We're talking about these kinds of things. I think we need to just pause for a moment, bring these things back when we're ready for them, when we're prepared for them, and we've got those things that are foundational, that are fundamental, and got those on the ground, got things operating, and then bring these things in at the beckon of small school districts when they feel that they're ready and necessary. In summary, a great bill before its time.
Senator Wassenberger.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, for my second time. First of all, when you see something that's outstanding, you try and mimic it, okay? And the difference between Wyoming and Utah is they have decided in their educational system that this is very important. And they have a director of foreign language at their Utah Department of Education. And that's what he does. He directs that program all across their state. And I think the last time I looked, they had 9,000 students involved. When we talk about cost, okay, the cost of the teacher is the same. The teacher in that classroom costs no matter what they teach. That's why it's a cheap form of reform. Okay? Now, so we have vacancies at the Wyoming Department of Education. We do have a person over there that has multiple responsibilities. She doesn't have the time to go out and promote this program. That's why we need a storefront. That's why we need somebody doing it full time. When I spoke with the state superintendent of public instruction, she is very well aware of this program and is heavily in favor of it. The governor spoke to this program in the State of the State address, not this year, but last year. He is in support. The reason why the accountability office was added into the bill was because the state superintendent of public instruction feels like she knows exactly who she wants to have this job and feels like she has multiple talents to help with accountability. And that's why it was added. What is the long-term cost? The long-term cost is $20,000 per school, one-time money, and then the cost of the visas, which is extremely expensive. It can be $5,000 per teacher. So there is no reason why, with the foundation funds that we have, we can't afford this program if we choose to. The real cost is the storefront at the Wyoming Department of Education, which would be $185,000 per year, doubled biennially. To my good friend from Sheridan County, what is a two-section school? A two-section school is two teachers, essentially. So if you had 40 kids in a grade and your school district decided they were going to split their classroom, they have two classes at that grade, okay? So in a K-6 situation, you would have seven foreign language teachers in that school, all of them costing the same amount as a teacher that teaches in that classroom. Small schools. The question was about small schools. If you can't go to a two-section school, it's not going to work for small schools. And I've done everything I can to try and schedule around and make it work, but it doesn't. It just won't. Okay? So that doesn't mean that we can't do this for our larger schools. How does it fit in with the Hathaway? The Hathaway has a two-year requirement of foreign language, and they would meet those requirements. So for the Hathaway, I don't see it benefiting in any way other than the fact that they're going to be extremely fluent by the time they get to the high school level. Micromanaging from Converse County. How is it micromanaging? The local community makes a decision that they are going to have a foreign language, dual language immersion program at the elementary school level. It is a local decision to do that after meetings to find out whether or not the community would like that. That is exactly what the community of Casper did last year, as did Jackson. So that local community made the decision based on the grants that you started last year, and they're doing it. So you have five schools in the state doing it now. And I think that answers all the questions. I hope I got them all. Any further questions?
Further discussion? Senator Barnard.
Question. One class, and what about the kids that are slow learners, and that how is that taken into effect?
Senator Wassenberger.
Madam Chairman, in Casper, the special programs kids were, if the parents signed up for the program, were being taught in the same classrooms, and I observed them. So what really happens is, one of the reasons why Spanish is one of the languages that's being taught in Casper is because when you start this program, if kids move away, it's hard to replace them if you're using Mandarin Chinese. Not very many communities in Wyoming have Mandarin Chinese people moving in. But if you do Spanish, the Spanish speakers come to your classroom, they're already fluent. But they struggle with the writing and the reading of their language. And so it improves that area there. But the thing about a Spanish dual immersion program is lots of times communities have those families moving in and they can replace students if they should happen to leave. Does that make sense?
Further discussion? Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 78. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no?
No.
The division having been called, all those in favor, please rise. 18. All those opposed, please rise. Eighteen to 11. Senate File 78 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 98. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 98, School Athletic Safety. Excuse me, sponsored by Senator Landon. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, O2, Cole, Dockstader, Pappas, and Rothfuss. Senator, co-chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Cole?
Chairman, I moved the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment last business day, I believe, and this bill was laid back, and I'm not sure I need to move it again. If you think I do, I will.
I believe it has been moved. So
I'll defer to Senator Landon. He does have an amendment.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Now that we've had a movement, we can get back on back on Senate File 98. Fellow senators, I really appreciated the conversation that we had yesterday. I thought some points were very well taken. I think that's absolutely the way this place ought to work. It certainly wasn't the intent of 98 to absolve the districts or state employees or the employees of a private entity of the responsibility with regard to concussion protocols that we established 3 or 4 years ago. My good friend from Albany County rightfully pointed out that those are important. That's why we did them. That's why we want our kids taken care of out there. That discussion really, I think, centered around language that I thought, the more I looked at it well into the night, it simply was giving off what I think was some wrong vibes. It was not the intention, for us to absolve our people out there of living up to those protocols. So with that said, I got with the good senator from Natrona County. I appreciated being able to sit down with him for a few minutes, and that's why that you have the Committee of the Whole amendment in front of you. Madam Chair, I would move the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 98 ask that it be read in. Thank you.
Will the reading clerk read the amendment?
Senate File 98, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, to Senate File
98. Senator Lane.
Senate File 98. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 2, lines 15 to 33.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I do move that amendment now that it has been read in. I think that that the reasons for the bill still exist. And fellow senators, I think that we have honed in on some language that hopefully makes a little bit more sense and gets to the crux of the issue. What we're trying to do is to afford some protections. Just because a school district out there establishes these concussion protocols, we did not want that in and of itself to open up a civil action against that district, nor did we want civil action taken against an employee who reasonably follows protocols and is operating in good faith. That is exactly as we would expect them to be doing out there, and they are doing across our state. So what we're trying to do is afford a little bit more protection for our folks out there. I think that the amendment does that. As you can see, we split it into two parts. We split it into the implementation phase, which is subparagraph double I, government entities and private organizations that establish these protocols, and then the execution phase, which is the employees who are reasonably trying to follow. I think that does hopefully a decent job of explaining where we are with the language. You can see where it tracks in. We are deleting the standing committee amendment. We're starting over at the bottom of page 2. That's the guts of the bill and brand new language that I hope gets a little bit better to the point. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Discussion on the amendment, Mr. President.
I apologize. I wasn't here during the discussion. I was enjoying the beautiful town of Gillette. I've experienced the, by the way, experienced the oil and gas 500 besides the coal mine. 500. You guys ought to do something about that highway. Having said all that, with respect to this amendment, a couple of questions that, first of all, you set about in the statutes proclaiming that head injuries are an inherent risk to these activities. I think more and more we're finding out that there are, it may or may not be true that there are inherent risks. There are risks that you can take to prevent it. Helmets, obviously cheerleading is a little bit different. But to proclaim in statutes that head injuries are an inherent risk is, I think, a dangerous statement to make in that we have capacity to either eliminate or reduce risk altogether by protective equipment and other protocols. So I question whether or not the legislature ought to be in the business of declaring, particularly that, for example, a football, that it's an inherent risk, as though you could send folks out without a football helmet, or you can use a 30-year-old helmet instead of a current one. And by declaring that, you're saying, well, you don't have an obligation. I submit that's not the best practice. There is already sovereign immunity with respect to schools, and to make that declaration seems dangerous to me. With respect to the following language, if the issue is, I guess the question is, what are you setting out to prevent? This language addresses that if you reasonably follow, you'll have exemption. And really the area where you want the immunity is the failure to, so it's the failure to adopt a protocol. So if you fail to adopt a protocol, should you have a sovereign immunity, you probably have it right now. But these actually inadvertently create mandates when you begin to address it on the other side. Say if you reasonably follow the protocols, you have immunity. Well, what if you fail to? What if you miss it? And so you have the failure to act, to adopt the protocol, and the failure to administer the protocol that's been adopted is the areas that you would be looking for the protection. It would be rare that you would say, well, if you adopt a protocol, there's immunity for taking action. Almost never are you looking for immunity to take an action. It's the failure to take the act. So I submit to you that while I understand that you may be trying to, are you trying to encourage the adoption of protocols and encourage the following them, you don't need to make that immunity. That's an action to take an activity, which is always better than inaction. But this doesn't, I submit to you, the way you drafted it, help anyone, and it creates some inadvertent holes because now you fail to address in this the whole issue of failure to act, adopt them, and failure to follow the protocols, which are the evils that you're trying to address.
The discussion on the amendment? Senator Landon.
Madam Chairman, thank you, and I appreciate our president. He's got a lot more knowledge with respect to the law than I do, but I would say that, he brought up a couple of points that really come to the very point of why I thought we ought to draft legislation like this. You know, the point is that best practice today is not going to be best practice tomorrow. And when he brings up the issue of helmets and whatever, that's exactly the point. I simply don't want our people out there hung out by protocols that are in place and by practices that are best practices today. I don't want some outside, you know, firm coming in here and filing a class action lawsuit saying that District A is hung out because they don't have the same kind of protocols in place as District B. And, you know, regarding a failure to adopt or the failure to adhere to these protocols, I think that's what this amendment does. It says that we're gonna try to give some added protection to those who are doing it right. And those who aren't better get up to speed. And by the way, in relation, and it's still on the amendment, because that really is the guts of the bill, class action suits are coming. And the reason that they're coming is that they're easy to settle. And so they're coming. And what this bill attempts to do, and maybe we need work in the future on this whole issue as well, but what this bill attempts to do is to try to provide a little modicum of protection to those districts, to the High School Activities Association, to those coaches and administrators out there who are trying to do it right. Thank you. I encourage you to pass the amendment. Thank you.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess I posed the question yesterday. I still haven't heard the answer to that. What are the protocols, and are we using them, or who's not? If you pass this amendment and they're not, as the good sponsor indicated, if District A has the state-of-the-art protocols, but District B does not, should we excuse District B? I need to know. I mean, are we doing it right? I know firsthand here, having experienced it with my daughter, who played high school basketball, and suffered a concussion. I mean, that was pretty rigorous for her to ever get back onto the court. It took her about 2 weeks to get back onto the court, even though she wanted to go back in that very game. So I know that, you know, it may be easier. There may be economies of scale for larger districts to implement the protocols. But I'm not sure that we have uniform protocols across the state. Are there districts that are not utilizing them? If that's true, why would we excuse those districts from implementing state-of-the-art protocols, which this amendment would do?
Further discussion? Mr. President.
Madam Chairman, you've got two issues going on here, and the chairman of the Appropriations Committee talks about what should be the state policy with respect to whether employees and folks involved in athletics ought to be educated and trained in the identification and treatment of head injuries in the sports, and should there be liability if they fail to undertake that. So that's a policy decision with respect to, do we expose and do we want to limit the liability of the state's insurance plan to injuries that result from the failure to act? So if you look at the existing language, that goes directly to the question that the chairman talked about. The issue then is, and having not been in the conversation, I assume that it was, that the conversation was as just described, the amendment. And the amendment, I submit to you, regardless of how you come out on that issue, the amendment does not address or help that issue. In fact, the amendment creates what we typically call, it's a negative pregnant. And that means that when you look at lines 7 through 9, where it says that there shall be no civil liability for damages for acts taken in good faith, that tells you that there is civil liability if you fail to take that act. So that's the negative pregnant. The negative side of that is there is civil liability. My point to you, to the body, is that right now there is sovereign immunity. That exists. I'm not aware of any district being sued for violating or failing to implement a policy. Maybe it happens in the future. I'm not familiar with any suit that was successful that says you didn't have the best helmet, you could have gotten a better helmet. You were I'm not aware of those. Then what the question is in the absence of those types of claims and those prevailing, is there a hole in the existing sovereignty immunity umbrella that requires a specific requirement? But in this instance, you're not, if the umbrella is sovereign immunity, and what happens, folks, remember this, we say there's sovereign immunity, and we make small exceptions to that. Well, in this case, inadvertently, you're actually saying that there is immunity, there is liability if you fail to do these things. So it's a negative fragment. It assumes that there's liability on the opposite side. So the staff, the original language does attempt to try to make the umbrella larger if it's required. I'm not sure it is. This, on the other hand, creates an opening, which is an inadvertent exception that you don't want, on and against the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment?
That's exactly what you're trying to do.
Senator Landon.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I really appreciate the questions from our appropriations chair and intended to get to that. We might as well tackle it here on the amendment because it did come up on the floor. Regarding those concussion protocols, the reports back to me are that each one of our districts has established protocols as required by Enrolled Act 89-2010. What we did, however, a couple of years ago in Senate File 104 is that we handed that duty of oversight and coordination and assistance to the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction. So I cannot answer for you whether or not we've ever gotten up to an equal playing ground. I would submit that we probably have not. Like the good senator for Cheyenne, I believe that I come from a district where the protocols are probably much more robust than we have in other districts out there. For example, we baseline test every single one of our athletes in that community. I'm not sure that all communities out there have the wherewithal to baseline test every one of their athletes. So that's the answer to that. We do have protocols out there. They are not mirror images of each other statewide. I appreciate the comments of the president. If we have created a loophole with this language, we can certainly revisit. Hopefully, the Senate has an idea of where we're trying to get with this language. You know, regarding whether or not it's needed in the first place, the Assistant Attorney General feels like it is. He said that acts shielding recreational event organizers from claims are often ineffective. Wyoming's Recreation Safety Act is no exception, and Wyoming's courts have recently determined that the Act does not immunize providers under various case-specific circumstances. For example, the Wyoming Supreme Court recently held that a spectator at the Wyoming Open Golf Tournament injured when a competitor's ball hit him in the head had a viable claim against the tournament's organizer. So the fact is, We do have some coverage through our Recreation Safety Act, but according to the Attorney General, even that sometimes breaks down. So the attempt here is to try to give a little bit of added protection to those who are out there operating in good faith. So I would appreciate your consideration. I think this language is better than what we had. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On the amendment, the issue that we're trying to get at, Madam Chairman, is Several years ago, we passed some language that required that commencing with the school year 2011-2012, it required each board of trustee, local level, to adopt protocols to address risks associated with concussions and other head injuries resulting from athletic injuries. The protocols shall include training of coaches and athletic trainers to facilitate the recognition of symptoms of the concussion, address restrictions concerning participation in school athletic events after suffering a concussion or head injury, and also include means for providing to students and parents information on head injuries and concussions and related restrictions on the participation in athletic activities. So all we did, Madam Chairman, I believe, as a legislature, we required that, and there was some discussion, I remember, at the time of the adoption of that one of the risks that we would have is where we find ourselves today, and we had some of this discussion yesterday, that ultimately we've created affirmative duty to on local boards of trustees to adopt protocols. And so one of the concerns is that when we've done that, Madam Chairman, we have created some risks and some potential liability in the event that someone fails to comply or adopt protocols in conformity with that statute. And that, indeed, I believe in conversations with the prime sponsor, is the purpose of this bill is to make sure and avoid, essentially, I believe in my discussion with him, two evils. Madam Chairman, the first one was simply that there has been a trend identified in the circles of not in this state but in other states in the circle of athletics athletics at schools that there are a series of lawsuits coming where people are suing this. In this case, it would be the Board of Trustees, who has a responsibility to drop the protocol, that they've sued them because the protocols aren't strict enough, or they're not they don't have the latest and best practices. So that's one issue. The other issue also then is when you have the coach, I think the other issue that we were talking about and with the sponsor was when you have the coach or you have a trainer and someone is administering and goes through the protocol, if they're following the protocol that's been laid out for them, that they ought to have some protection with respect to that. Now, if there is immunity, if there's already sovereign immunity, obviously, Madam Chairman, we wouldn't want to mess that up with this bill or this amendment. But one of the things that we heard yesterday in the debate from a school administrator up in Campbell County, who I understand was a former athletic director for one of the fine junior highs up there, was talking about that they have significant insurance up there to cover these very types of things. And if they do, Madam Chairman, that, I believe, is one of the exceptions to the sovereign immunity that we have, that you waive the sovereign immunity for the school district if they have insurance that covers those events. They've waived the sovereign immunity up to the amount of the insurance that they have. So it's, I guess it's one of those things, Madam Chairman, that the good sponsor of the bill finds is these. He certainly finds himself in Hades if he doesn't, and in Hades if he does. And so the hope is that with the collective intellect of this body, which sometimes is very good and sometimes seems to be incredibly suspect, that most of the time, unfortunately, in my experience, it usually is comes through in a big way most of the time. But that we could make sure that this bill does what it's intended to do, and that is to provide both our boards of education and folks, when they're trying to do the right thing and they're doing it and someone comes back in hindsight and says that was not the right thing, although you thought it was at the time, that you have some ability to defend yourself and avoid some of those liabilities that you do that come in instances like that. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just want to address one thing because I don't know that I normally do that, but a good sponsor had cited a particular incident regarding a golf tournament, and I'm very familiar with that because the person that was hit with that golf ball is a very good friend of mine, and it did not involve the school district, did not involve a governmental entity, and it involved the Wyoming Open, and the starter is a hole number one. Now, my son, who played all-state high school golfer, could hit that green with a 2-iron. The professional is on the tee box, and the the starter directs the professional, a professional, to tee off. Now, the group ahead is on the green, and the father of one of the players is standing on the side of the green, watching his son play. And in spite of that, in spite of the fact that it's only 280 yards or two, whatever, Senator Vibau can hit that along. I've played with him. He can hit that easy on hole number one. Reality was it directed him to do it anyway. And so I don't want that to be an example of what you're trying to address here today, because that's a totally different bailiwick.
Further discussion on the amendment. Mr. President.
Chairman, I listened to the last debate, and with respect to whether you like the bill or not, the bill as it was drafted and brought to you accomplishes the purpose. So it's not that hard. Not, and I'm not going to speak to whether or not lawyers should or shouldn't like the language, okay? I'm just talking about the mechanics here. So the original draft did exactly what I think the sponsor wanted. Turn over to page one. It says it's clarifying that required safety protocols for concussions-related injuries do not expand governmental immunity. In other words, you go back to you start off with the king can do no harm. That's your governmental immunity. So we go out and mandate that certain activities be done to protect our students, our children. And what this bill then went to do, if you look over on page 2, it says the salient features are at lines 21 and 22. The failure to follow those statutes, those protocols, does not create a basis for liability. Bill did exactly what you're asking for. If you like the bill, stand up for the bill, stand up for your language. The new language that's proposed in the amendment does not accomplish that. And, in fact, what it suggests is when you say employees who reasonably follow the protocols are immune, that suggests if you don't follow it, you have liability. That's a negative pregnant. Don't go the way of the amendment. Stay with the language and take your proposal. That's fine. But your the original language accomplishes your purpose. And then let's get back and then we get back on the bill and decide whether or not we like that bill or not. The amendment, however, takes you a new direction. Your original language, I believe, accomplished what you want. The amendment takes you down a path you don't want to go. That's regardless of how you feel about this issue. On and against the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Landon's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 98, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
The amendment has failed. We're back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill? Senator Landon.
Thank you. To my friend from Natrona County, we struck out on language. I appreciate all of the discussion. To my friend from Cheyenne, I just wanted to point out that particular case that was referenced was brought to me by the Assistant Attorney General, and I appreciate him drawing some distinction between that particular event and high school events. And I also appreciate the comments from the president, who was not able to be here yesterday. And I still think that the premise of the bill, I hope you would agree that it's an attempt to get on the right track and provide some additional safety net there for our folks throughout the K through 12 system and high school activities, junior high activities. And so I would urge the passage of the bill. I will continue to work with those behind me to maybe sharpen up some language. But thank you, Madam Chairman. I appreciate the conversation today. I hope you'll support the bill.
Discussion on the bill. Mr. President.
Madam Chairman, with respect to the back on the bill now, with respect to lines 17 through 23, I think I frankly agree with this. I think on lines 17 through 23 that undertaking to adopt a policy to protect our youth, following that policy should not be a basis for a claim failure to implement the policy, or whether you can make the mistake, or you, those are judgment calls. I do, however, call into question and wonder whether in the next amendment we ought to be looking at lines 15 through 17. Because honestly, I don't know that we can necessarily say, as we sit here today, that concussions and head injuries resulting from school athletic and cheerleading participations are an inherent risk. I think there are aspects about football that may be an inherent risk. But to suggest, for example, that we don't have to provide the modern helmets, and that you can, if your helmet's broken, you can send the student out with a broken helmet, I'm not sure that that is an inherent risk. And to do a blanket statement that all aspects of athletics and cheerleading are, have inherent risks, I think it's true with cheerleading, that when you start doing tumbling, when you start doing throws, that there's a failure, there's a, that risk that somebody won't catch you. On the other hand, if you send somebody out that's a third grader to catch somebody that's a tenth grader, you're probably going to have a problem. And so there is, I'm just concerned about making a blanket statement that there's nothing that we can do, and this is just an inherent risk that you go out, when we fact know there are a lot of things that can be done and should be done to avoid these injuries. Now, once you set the protocols in, I would agree that you do the best you can and things will happen. But that doesn't mean all aspects are inherent risks.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Landon.
Chairman, thank you. Again, I appreciate the attention to this paragraph. It's the guts of the bill, and would appreciate the opportunity to work with the president on something that might be better. I do think, folks, that statement is something we want to be real careful with, because I do think that there are inherent risks with what we're doing in high school activities out there. And I thought that it was important, based on conversations with the Attorney General's office and with our High School Activities Association, which just got back from the Federation at the national level. You know, whether we like it or not, this is coming. And, you know, the case back in Illinois, just to carry this out a little bit further for us, the case back in Illinois is demanding of that High School Activities Association back there that medical personnel be available at every single practice, every single game, and that they're trying to put the bar so high that administrators in Illinois are saying that it's going to do away with the sport of football in Illinois, except for maybe the very rich districts that can afford to play it. I sure don't want any sort of thing like that to happen in Wyoming, and maybe through some work in the next couple of readings, Madam Chair, we can work hard on this language. I appreciate the help I'm getting. Again, I think hopefully it's on the right track and you'll support the bill. Thanks.
For the Senator Christensen.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just ask that you take a close look when you're thinking about new language. Down there on line 22, when it talks about the failure to implement or the inadequacy of concussion-related protocols. So we're not excusing inadequate protocols.
Further discussion on the bill? Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 98, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
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 Senate File 98 has passed Committee of the Whole. Oh, absolutely, Mr. President.
Madam Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Yes.
With respect to debate Just a reminder, if you look at Mason's, you turn over to page 87, you're looking at section 111. The language says it is unparliamentary and inconsistent with the independence of a legislative body to refer to the name or the office of the executive in order to influence the vote. Now, it does go on to say it is an order to end debate to refer to the executive or the executive's opinions with their approval or criticism with such references as relevant to the subject under discussion and otherwise conform to the rules. So it's not proper to debate to say, I spoke with the an attorney general, I spoke with this person, and he's told me this, because the point of debate is that if you have an opinion, you adopt it as your own, we fight the opinions. You bring in somebody else's character, you can't have a fair debate. Now, if somebody submits an opinion and says, I agree with this opinion, then you get up and say, I disagree with that opinion. But we're the legislative department, and when you're engaging in debate, you just have to be careful how you reference the executive branch, and you're certainly not bringing in them to vouch for the credibility of your argument, if you will, by directly saying that he agrees with this person within the executive agrees with my position.
Thank you, Mr. President. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 45. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 45, Digital Information Privacy Task Force Reappropriation, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision. No report back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Pappas, Scott, absent Senator Hicks, excuse Senator Meyer, Senator Case, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Ross, Wasserberger, excuse Senator Perkins, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 45, Digital Information Privacy Task Force Reappropriation. I'd ask that you yield to Senator Rothfuss.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I bring Senate File 45, Digital Information Privacy Task Force Reappropriation. Ask the body for their favorable consideration. Madam Chairman, this is simply based on the structure of the original task force. It was set up such that we had to come back to the body for a reappropriation of our funds that were previously appropriated. In other words, there's no new appropriation request, but it was established such that I or other members of the committee had to come back before you to see if you were still interested in having a continuation of the Digital Information Privacy Task Force and briefly report for that reauthorization. So this is that moment. The task force, I believe, Madam Chairman, was successful. We did a lot of work in the interim. We had 3 meetings each of those 2 days, came up with about 6 pieces of legislation, actually had about 8 or 9 on the table at different times. That legislation is certainly in various forms right now going through the bodies. We focused primarily on sort of information and some of the low-hanging fruit legislation that we'd identified in this next interim, the intent of the Digital Information Privacy Task Force, if you consider to appropriate for it, is to look at schools, local school districts, and their security. Particularly, that's something we've been asked to take a strong, hard look at, and that's one of the things we would like to take on in the next interim. And the other concept we would like to focus on is cities, towns, and counties. Those are 2 areas where we heard there's not a lot of structure in the standards and requirements throughout the state. There's a lot of variation and a lot of possibilities for digital information privacy breaches and other considerations. So, Madam Chairman, I would ask the body to continue to support the Digital Information Privacy Task Force efforts through the next interim by passing and supporting Senate File 45, which reappropriates those funds.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a question for the sponsor, as well as possibly the chairman of the Corporations Committee. And I think some good work come out of this task force in the first year, but why would that not be the duty or the responsibility for interim work for the Corporations Committee? Or do you feel like it's just too much to try to have them do that plus the other interim work they need to do? And I attended one of the meetings, and it seems to me that almost a day was spent on taking the information you gathered and going over it again, and there was another step in the process of getting it out to the people. And it seems to me that you could do it all once with having an interim study by the Corporations Committee. They do it and bring it back, and you get it all done at one time rather than two independent bodies.
Further discussion? Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I believe it isn't an easy matter of having the Corporations Committee do that, to the extent that we basically did 6 days of work to do the work that we were doing to prepare and gain the expertise in the subject material. We brought in a lot of outside experts to help to inform us, and then try to bring that information together, synthesize it, consolidate it, and present that to the Corporations Committee in the form of legislation, seemed to be more effective. To the extent that we have, as one of the members of the committee currently, or one of the co-chairmen of the Corporations Committee, that helps us to bridge that relationship between the two bodies and facilitate it better. And one of the other aspects is, with a task force, it allows you to bring in independent expertise, and we valued the four members of the that were appointed by the governor to that task force and the expertise that they brought in terms of understanding from a business perspective, from a governance perspective, and then from an independent private sector perspective, how these changes in statutes and evolution of advanced technologies and information technology was going to affect those scopes. So it really was an effective and functional structure, I believe, in having it be a task force rather than simply being an interim study, particularly when you consider the overall burden on the Corporations Committee, where they had dozens of pieces of legislation. If they had to take this on as well, it would have been quite a task for them to get up to speed on all of that information and then work those bills in addition to the ones that they work. So I do believe it's an additional added value to have the task force instead of just assigning it as an interim topic to that committee.
Further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 45. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 45 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 47. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 47, City Engineer's Duty to Estimate Project Costs, sponsored by Senator Case. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Meyer, and Pappas. Excuse, Senators Hicks and Scott. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a do pass motion on Senate File 47 and to explain this good bill, I would refer to the sponsor, the good Senator from Lander.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's a pretty simple bill. It has to do with the duties of a city engineer. And if you look currently in our law, a city engineer has to prepare a project estimate for any bit of work that's over $200. I don't know how long that's been in, Madam Chairman, but the testimony we had from in committee from a city engineer's office and from the organization that represents all of our municipalities was that that's a very long, long bit of statute a long time ago. What this bill does is to take out that one sentence and leaves the other duties of the state engineer. So it removes the sentence that says, before the governing body makes any contract for any work or improvement exceeding $200, the city engineer shall submit to the governing body an estimate of the cost thereof. Now, Madam Chairman, that's being removed with this bill. The bill's actually drafted, so if someone wanted to play with that dollar amount and leave the language in about the estimate, we had a discussion about that, and we decided that this is really an archaic practice and that it's up to the governing body to decide on some of these issues, and the committee concurred that the entire language could be taken out. But if someone wanted to pursue amendments down the road to change the dollar limit, I suppose that's a possibility. We asked what dollar limit they might think is appropriate, and they came up with figures like $35,000. Would be, it's everything is so different than $200 now, Madam Chair. Happy to answer any questions.
Discussion on the bill? Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 47. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 47 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 103. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 103, Bicycle Pathway and Highway Separation, sponsored by Senator Scott. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Barnard, Cooper, Kraft, and Johnson, Senator Cooper, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Cooper?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 103 do pass. Madam Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment number 1, and I'd like to have it read in at this time, if I could.
Senate File 103, standing committee amendment number 1, page 2, line 15.
Madam Chairman, I move standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 103 and ask for your favorable consideration. Madam Chairman, for an explanation of the bill and the amendment, I'd like to refer to Senator Scott.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, this is the bill relating to bicycle pathways, trying to encourage us to develop a system. The standing committee amendment, let's deal with that first. The first two items, really the first three items on your amendment, relate to the data that the Wyoming Department of Transportation has that's available. It turns out it's easy for them to generate identification report on all the motor vehicle bicycle crashes. That gives your epidemiologist better database to figure out where our real problems are. And so the amendment changes that language. It turns out that it's hard to generate the data on what accidents were caused where somebody tried to dodge a bicyclist and lost control of their vehicle. It's not collected that way, so we need to put the extent possible language in there. The date changes on page 5. I never cease to be amazed by the number of times that one can look at a set of dates and not realize that didn't make any sense. That's wrong. This changes those to something that does make sense, and you can read that and see why. And then the final thing was there was concern about whether the tourism office was large enough to be able to manage the duties of managing this task force and being the executive secretary. So what the committee did as a compromise was say, heck, it's the executive branch. Governor runs the executive branch. Let him decide who gets to do that. And, Madam Chairman, that's the amendment. I'd be happy to answer any questions in the amendment. Urge adoption.
Discussion on the amendment. Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Cooper's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File number 103, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, this bill, as I said, it relates to bicycle pathways where ultimately, many years down the road, I'm hoping we're going to go, is where there's a system where we get the bicyclists largely off our highways, onto separate pathways. I think that that will have tremendous benefits, both in terms of safety and in terms of making us an attractive state for people to go bicycle riding. There's three main thrusts in the bill, Madam Chairman. The first is safety. We had 5 fatal accidents last year where bicyclists got run over by motor vehicles. That's 5 too many. Some real tragedies involved there. And many of them would be avoided. We had a couple of them where the driver was drunk. If you had the bicyclists off the streets and highways, those wouldn't happen. One where there was inattention on the part of the driver, again, get them off the streets and highway. And a couple where the bicyclists did something stupid. I think something as elementary that all of us, it's a mistake all of us are capable of making with fatal results of forgetting to look both ways when you cross a highway. And it turns out that the department has good data on quite a number of the crashes, and that'd be fodder for them to do a proper safety analysis. And that's what the first section of the bill is all about. We do ask the state epidemiologist to take a look at the data and weigh in. I think get him away, it'd be a little change of pace for him to look at that kind of data as opposed to some of the workplace fatality data. But it's exactly the sort of thing an epidemiologist is trained to do, and we take advantage of that. The second thrust in the bill is economic opportunity, Madam Chairman. And frankly, I think we're missing a good part of a major economic opportunity. There are increasing number of people who are doing long-distance bicycling, both as individuals, groups of 2 and 4 and things like that, as well as some very organized tour groups. And I remember this summer running into one of those tour groups coming down off South Pass. I bet we passed 300 bicyclists in the course of 10 miles. And, boy, driving, and I was driving, you got to pay attention there. You don't want to hit those people. They are being careful, but you really got to pay attention. And saw the same group, I think it was the same group, and then a few days later, coming up and going into Du Bois. I've had a tour come through Casper. I think they stayed in one of the local motels, and I got a call from a classmate of mine who was doing it on a cross-country tour. And that's good business, because the speeds they're going, they're going to stay overnight in several cities and towns, and they're going to spend some money. I think, is a valuable business we need to compete for. And talking to some of the long-distance bicyclists, including, Madam Chairman, frankly, a member of my church, he said Wyoming has a bad reputation among the long-distance cyclists as not being a very bicycle-friendly state, as having quite a number of dangerous places. And he said, you get off the highway and away from the motor vehicles, it's aesthetically a much better, much more enjoyable experience. And they try to go to Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, who have systems that are well developed. Some of them on the highway right-of-ways, some of them on rails to trails, but much more bicycle friendly, and they're getting a significant amount more business off of it. And I will also add that a was up in Alaska at the Council of State Government meeting, I was impressed by the extent of that state system, where they've got in the highway right-of-ways, you can go clear from up close to Denali Park down to the Kenai Peninsula. And, you know, they have, I suppose maybe in the off-season they can use them for snowmobiles, I don't know. But they've got an extensive system and they use it. It was impressive to see. And then the third thrust is just public health. One of our major problems is the sedentary lifestyle, the obesity that goes with it. And the key to dealing with that problem is to get recreational activities that are pleasant for people. A lot of people enjoy this bicycling if you can get decent places to do it. And so that's the third thrust here. And then, Madam Chairman, the bill is carefully designed. My philosophy is that when we're having a cyclical downturn like we're having in our revenues, that's not when you try to spend big money. That's when you do your planning so that you're prepared when there is some funding available. And I think we will be surprised the extent to which there will be some local funding available to do local things, and where a little signage would be a big help. Madam Chairman, that's the long and the short of the bill. It is a task force, carefully designed so there's no need for an appropriation. It means we're going to ask a few people to serve without some compensation, and I think there's the enthusiasts around who will do it, and get us a decent plan that I think has a lot of promise economically and in terms of safety. And I'd be happy to answer any questions anybody has.
Thank you. Discussion, Senator Von Fladen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Was there any discussion in the committee about just 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, we actually changed the statutes to allow bicyclists on the road? The old statute used to say if there was a bike path available, you had to have your bicycle on it, and so we just allowed that. We just struck that language. And then there's been an issue up in the north of the Jackson area, the Teton Park area, where they built quite an extensive bike path, but they've actually had wrecks of bicyclists that are trying to do their 50, 60 miles an hour. And here's, you know, mom and dad with the baby carriage out enjoying the bike path. So was there any discussion about that conflict issue?
For the discussion on the bill, Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, there was a little discussion on the subject of accidents, bicycles, and pedestrians. The data on that may be somewhat limited. That should be something that frankly should be looked into, should probably, as you develop the system, where you're going to have a lot of that conflict, and it will tend to be around the settled areas in the towns, you probably need to do that to a little different standards than you do out in the middle of the prairies and some of our long-distance state highways. With regard to the choice between the roadway and the pathway, it depends. A lot of that's local circumstance as to what you've got where. There wasn't particular discussion of that other than what I've heard from the cyclists is, gee whiz, if we can get off the roadway onto a pathway, that's generally a much better way to go. And they'll voluntarily do that because it'll be pleasanter and safer.
Further discussion? Senator Cooper.
I would just like to mention that in the committee we did have some discussion about the possibility of conflicts between pedestrians, ordinary walking pedestrians on trails, and also bicycles, and also about the fact that when you get the more urban areas you get into, probably that they may be a little less conflict than when you get out into the rural areas where they may have a tendency to want to open up speed a little bit on these bicycles. But part of this task force study will be to actually, I believe, if I remember right, to look into that situation as to how you would want to classify the various bike paths, either in an urban area or a rural area, whatever. So there was some discussion about that, and we hope that the task force will take that on.
Further discussion. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think that the good, tall senator from Natrona County is right, that at least at this point in time, it's a task force, it's planning. But I want to urge a word of caution here. I think that this is maybe the nose of the camel under the tent, so to speak. From an appropriation standpoint, we have, when you see the budget bill, you'll see the state of Wyoming coming in and putting $100,000 into the bicycle path in Wilson. So, you know, having a statewide system or a plan is a good idea, but this could be as close as a $100 million project.
Further discussion on the bill? Further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Cooper's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 103. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 103 has passed Committee of the Whole. Division having been called, all those in favor of Senate File 103, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. Ten. 16 ayes, 10 no. Senate File 103 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 97. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 97, Department of Transportation Communication Facilities, sponsored by Senator Meyer. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Emmerich, Escobel, Meyer. No, Senator Johnson, Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a do pass motion on Senate File 97. There was a standing committee amendment. I wish that be read in at this time.
Senate File 97, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 6.
I would move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 97 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. I'll explain the amendment. The amendment essentially is mostly part of the bill. Essentially, the genesis for this bill is to try to figure out how we could utilize the $100 million or so assets that the Department of Transportation has in their Wyoling program. We did a similar amendment this summer with public television, allowing them to access that in appropriations. And we thought that there's a lot of areas out there where we have underservice, and we wanted to be able to allow the use of those state facilities, but do so in a manner which was not anti-competitive with the current providers that are out there. And so we went to the telecommunications industry, and they helped us with some of the language in here. And you'll see that in the standing committee amendment that we said for purposes of this section, an area is underserved if private communication providers are unwilling or unable to provide the telecommunications service to a substantial number of households or persons in a geographic area. We also bring in the Public Service Commission. They testified in the committee that though this is an area that is new to them, that they thought that they could handle it without too much of a problem and do it on a case-by-case basis, and that is to determine where there's where it's underserved and to determine what the amount of money that should be charged in as a market base as far as what comes back to the state. So I would call for the question on the standing committee amendment, and if there are no questions, I'd ask for the vote.
Discussion on the amendment. Ready for the question on the amendment?
Question.
All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 97, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Okay.
Senator Meyer.
Madam Chairman, essentially what this does is allow access for telecommunications companies to the facilities of DOT, but it does so only in a manner where we're sure that we're not competing with other companies and that we're not displacing any investments that are already made out there, because it's only in those areas where it is underserved. And hopefully we'll have a few of these towers that are in areas where you're going down the road in the rural areas that you'll be able to get some telecommunication service. And so that's the reason for the bill. I think we've got it in good fashion right now, and I ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the bill. Mr. McCarthy, floor leader.
Chairman, just a question for the sponsor. During the interim, the Appropriations Committee talked about public television not having an opportunity to participate in WildLink, and we got some response. And with this language, you're leaving out other – do the telecommunication companies probably not include public television? I think they've worked out their differences, but I want to know if this would include them or not.
For the discussion – Senator Meyer.
Madam Chairman, public television wasn't brought up because we'd already addressed it, so I think they're in good shape either way. We didn't talk about nonprofits. Most of the language was about determining whether or not there was, you didn't want to have unfair use of the state asset and provide a competitive environment, which that was unfair to one provider or the other provider. So public TV being a nonprofit, and not actually, we're really talking about cellular usage here, not so much TV usage. So TVs really didn't come up, or radios or anything else. What essentially came up was how to get more cell coverage.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, and one other question, if they in fact do lease it, does it go into their enterprise fund? What happened to the money when it comes into to YDOT? Does it go into their little small pot of money they have, or do we have any access to that, or is it just earmarked?
Discussion, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We didn't have any specific discussion about where the money would go. It's just that they could lease it. We could either direct that in a subsequent amendment to say that it goes back to the general fund or to an enterprise fund or however the body would like it. Right now, it would probably just go back to one of their enterprise funds wherever they lease different assets and it returns back to the department. So if we want to put actually the road signs on where it goes, there's no problem with doing that on second reading.
Further discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 97. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 97 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 92. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 92, Workers' Compensation County Elected Officials, sponsored by Senator Cole. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Cole, Cooper, Rothfuss, Von Fladeren, Senator Rothfuss, acting chairman. It was re-referred to committee number two, appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, and Ross. Excuse, Senator Wasserberger, Senator Ross, chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Von Fladeren.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move when the committee of the whole rises to report do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 92, and I yield the floor to Senator Coe to explain.
Senator Coe.
Madam Chairman, thank you. What this bill does, it authorizes workers' compensation coverage for all county officers. Now, understand that in the input I've had on the bill, we discovered that a lot of county officers didn't even know that they didn't have workers' compensation coverage. Why the term county officer, so we don't get it convoluted with special districts? And if you look at Wyoming Statute 18, Chapter 3, it uses the term officer in every case when referring to commissioners, assessors, county and prosecuting attorneys, clerks, sheriffs, treasurers, and clerks of district court. That's why the term officer that is relevant as it relates to county officers. If you go to page 2, you'll see, starting on line 14, actually, the above paragraph, paragraph 7, talks about the definition of employee, and there's a laundry list in there, and then at the bottom it says employee does not include. So paragraph N says an elected public official or an appointed member of any governmental board of commission, except for duly elected or appointed. And then we delete sheriff and county coroner because those are the only county officers that are currently covered under workers' compensation, and insert officer. The next relevant thing, I think, is if you go to the fiscal note, you'll see that the anticipated revenue increase is $250,835. The anticipated expenditure is the identical number. That's because in testimony, Department of Workforce Services, they anticipate the cost of claims and medical indemnity reserves will approximately equal the amount of increased premiums. Now, if you look up above, you'll see that the salary data shows a total workforce estimate. 2.27% is the percentage paid in, and the total number for county officers' salaries is $11,050,003. This is optional for counties. If you go into statute 2714-108J, where you don't, the exclusion but not adding them to required coverage, it allows, therefore, counties to opt in. They don't have to. They aren't required to. Niobrara County might not want to. Fremont County might. So that's what the bill does. It was amazing to me that, you know, they didn't even know. Some of them didn't even know. And it's a different county official out there today. For example, up in the Bighorn Basin, we have these cooperating agency statuses with the feds on BLM issues and, you know, Forest Service issues, and the commissioners don't just sit in the commissioner's office on Tuesday and sign vouchers. They're out and about doing different things. Assessors are out and about looking at properties. County clerks, for instance, during elections, they're out helping set up election machines. So what it does, it puts it on an even playing field. That's what the bill does, and I'd be more than happy to answer questions.
Discussion on the bill? Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Von Fladeren's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 92, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 92 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
True.
Motion has been carried.
Okay.
Where's our script? Right here? Okay. The reading clerk will please read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 57, due pass amended. Senate File 81, due pass amended. Senate File 90, due pass amended. Senate File 78, due pass amended. Senate File 98, due pass. Senate File 45, due pass. Oh, Senate File 98, due pass amended. Okay. Senate File 45, due pass. Senate File 47, due pass. Senate File 103, due pass amended. Senate File 97, due pass amended. And Senate File 92, due pass. Senator Kraft, Chairman.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
If heard the motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried, and the report has been adopted. Ms. Majority Floor Leader. I think that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that we stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, January 27th.
Are there any announcements? Senator Geis, we'll start with you and move from my left, right to left.
Committee number five, the public land on the resource, the meeting is about 15 minutes. Take that by the NRA, and the papers, and the Senator Fire Maxson, and the NRA, and the Senator Fire Maxson, and the Senator Fire Maxson.
Thank you, Senator Scott.
Mr. Vice President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in the normal committee room following bills SF-65, Medicaid Expansion Alternative, SF-129, Medicaid Share Plan, and if time permits, which it may well not, Senate File 119, Hospice Respite Care, and Mr. Vice President, I would add to the formal announcement that the copies of the proposed compromise amendment on Medicaid expansion are available in the committee room, anybody's interest, members or committee members or members of the public.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Senator Coe.
Mr. Vice President, your committee number four, Education, will meet tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, up in S-13, the room that we got bumped up to by the Appropriations Committee, to take up only Senate File 110, State Education Accountability and Assessment.
Let it go, Senator Coe. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, your committee, Transportation Committee, number 8, will meet upon adjournment on Wednesday the 28th in room S-14 to discuss the following bills. Senate File 93, County Road Fund Pavement Management. Senate File 2, Bar and Grill Liquor Licenses.
Thanks, Senator Meyer. Senator Ross.
Mr. Vice President, your Appropriations Committee will meet tomorrow. And the announcement says 12:30 p.m., but we're going to meet right on adjournment. We have one re-referral. Senate File 50, Tribal Liaisons. We will be meeting in the former Education Committee room. Now the Office of the Vice President and Joint Appropriations Committee, right next to the smoking lounge. And I don't think there's anybody in the Senate that smokes anymore, so. There you go. Oh, Floyd. Okay, right next to Floyd's office.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Vice President. Your committee number one, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, at room S1 to consider the following bills. Senate File 77, Ignition Interlock License Amendments. Senate File 111, Summary Probate Proceedings. Senate File 73, Forcible Entry and Detainer Amendments. Senate File 75, Child Support and Enforcement Amendments.
Thank you, Senator Christensen. Senator John Flatern.
Mr. Vice President, your committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, which deals only in quality, not quantity, will take up Senate File 117, Air Quality Construction Permitting, about 20 minutes after noon recess in S18.
Thank you, Senator Ron Flater. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, Management Council will meet in about 10 minutes in room 302.
Thank you very much. Any other announcements? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate stands adjourned until 10 a.m. Wednesday, January the 28th.